The DL Debate with Sister Sarah's Letterkenny, serving food you'll love in Sarah's Kitchen.
Welcome on and all to the DL Debate, your weekly GA podcast here now on Highland Radio. That's how I'm going to start talking soon. Listen, we have loads to discuss, of course, on the show as ever. Later on, I'm going to be joined by two of the top prominent refs in the county, Enda McFeely and Seamus McMonagall, to discuss the world of reffing. But first, as we round up the local and provincial scene, I'm joined by the master tactician, the Thomas Tuchel of the Glen. It's the one and only Guy McDade.
Come on, Brent, that's some intro.
You are the tactician, Guy, so I have to give you respect, you know. Guy, listen, first news up, listen, Guy, of course, Paddy McGrath has, well, not say we hung up the boots, because there's a big shift, I'm sure, that our draw boys will be looking for. But he stepped away from the county team. What a career he's had.
I just heard that this morning as well, sort of on the way to work on the news. You know, probably injuries played a part in the last while for it, you know, and he was obviously down the pecking order last year. So he was, because a lot of people would have thought, you know, he should have been in or thereabouts seeing game time, and it didn't really work out for him that way. So, listen, no one knows your body better than yourself. And you know, I thought if he had the wanter to get himself right, you know, it would be back again. Because let's be honest, Brent, we're not blessed with man marking corner backs. We're not at the minute. Obviously, Connor Morrison was a big loss last year. And, you know, a lot of people would have seen Connor maybe as a replacement for Paddy. But now that he's gone, suppose, you know, it opens up the door to more people. And, I mean, what a career he's had. He's still only 32, you know. Yeah. It's just a pity, the injury situation, you know. You'd like to think there was another few years in him. And hopefully, you know,
Of course, Gary, the experience of that position is so vital. And even as time goes on, just the ability to be in the right place at the right time, to stand big, and all those things that maybe we were missing at times in the championship past is not there, of course. And the reason, I suppose, he's around that long is he was in that under-21 team that went all the way to the All-Ireland final under Jim, and, of course, went down to the county set-up straight after that. So it's like he's been around forever, but you're saying, yeah, it feels like he maybe is a bit older, but he's still only 32. So talking to some of our draw boys, they were on about like his impact that he'll have for them next year, being a training all the time and that. And there's two ways I'm looking at that, Gary. I suppose if he's had a few niggles and that, I'm sure he has to be careful now how he treats his body and his training in the next couple of years for Ardra. So, you know, obviously he's going to be a huge influence to them to have around all the time. But again, I suppose he maybe has to be careful how he can't be driving on all the runs all the time. I would imagine, yeah, if he's going to, I suppose, take care of the body, there's a lot more living to be done, you know, after 32.
Yeah, and like, it's a real good point, you know, because when I was chatting to one of our young lads in the club at the weekend, and we're just talking about terms S&C and that, and we're talking about the older players, lads who would be, you know, in Paddy's window, and, you know, like, it's completely different for boys in their early to mid-30s. They're at a completely different stage of their S&C career. They're more prehab and rehab and keeping themselves injury-free. You know, they're their bodies in the neck usually that they want, and maybe trying to keep the body fat down, Brent, when you're over the 30s is obviously the big challenge as well. So it is, because it's easier to put weight on then. But Paddy's just probably, he's so solid, you know, like, he's just a man mountain of a cornerback. You know, he's whatever, 5'8", but he's just pure steel. So he is. And you definitely didn't want to run into him in a 50-50. And it's probably, you know, it was a huge outlet, in particular for our draft, coming out with the ball, you know, when he really demonstrated his sheer tenacity and will to lead the team. And probably, you know, when he came into the Donegal team, I think he, Brent, his debut, if memory serves me right, was way back on that ill-fated day across McLean, where we were beat out gate in 2010 against Armagh. So I think that was his debut that day, and probably didn't start off the greatest for him, but in fairness,
you know, that was my first ever co-com, and Johnny the BBC, right, and Johnny McCaffrey got married the day before, and I was one of his men. So you can imagine, hey, I head up that wee porta cabin in Cross McGlen, not just maybe in the best of form, but first ever game we won McCannon, and I was like, this probably could have had a better intro, but somehow you managed to go through it, you know.
I know. I was actually on the way to the airport, so I was, me and the wife, and we were actually heading on holidays. So we were, and we actually stopped off and got the game on the way. So we did. But no, you know, it was all onwards and upwards for him after that. Geez, many's a good day after that there. And probably, you know, at his early stages of his career, very much people were saying, the opposition was saying, oh, give him the ball, let him have the ball. But he really developed, I suppose, he worked hard on the skills where he was nearly a driving force, you know, and that was probably really evident on the club in Arbaugh, driving out with the ball in. But, you know, hopefully, Bryn, what I'd be really hopeful for is maybe that we've been lucky, maybe in the last lucky years, the boys that have stepped away, maybe have taken a short break or maybe zero break, but have thrown their hat back in right away, as in regards to development squads and underage squads, whether it's the minors, the under-20s. You know, that is so important. Paddy's experience is invaluable. And like you often talk about cornerbacks, that we don't have enough of them. I mean, we need him in working with our academies and working with our underage to develop our cornerbacks. So hopefully, you know, that the powers will be, you'll approach him in that and make him very much aware that he has a lot to offer. Because when all Ireland winners, you know, we don't have a lot of them in this county, so we got to make sure we harness them and get the most out of them.
Maybe when you take over the county team, we'll be back there again, Gary, who knows? Gary, just shooting across our own setup. The hurling there the weekend, Satanta beat Burt in the semi-final. Satanta beat Buncrana, and St. Union's have to play Burt in the other semi-final. That's in the hurling. In the football, of course, we had the very unusual scenario of St. Union's versus McCool's. McCool's beating Ardra and St. Union's beating Four Masters. Two big victories for both teams. So, certainly, Paddy setting it up, Gary setting it up for an interesting encounter. And of course, those are the two pitches where the game would have been. So we had a very unusual scenario of a coin toss to see where the game would be played. Unions won the toss, so the final now will be played at O'Donnell Park.
Yeah, the Glen would have been an ideal situation, Brian, or Brendan's would have been, you know, coming out from Letterkenny and down over the mountain from Balbuffet, you know, I thought it would have made sense maybe to throw it in there, but I can't wait for the game. So again, these teams probably have had a huge grudge the whole way through, and there's been some tasty encounters, never mind on the pitch along the sideline as well in years gone by, and it's been tit for tat. So it has. Unions kind of held the upper hand for a while, McCool's held the upper hand for a while, and this is nearly, you know, from the dogs in the street are saying this is kind of a last chance saloon now to say who the top dog is at their last underage game, you know. So there's a huge rivalry built up, and listen, I think the officials will need eyes in the back of their head come Sunday, because it's going to be intense, you know. And I'm really looking forward. We have inter-county players playing there, so we have even senior inter-county players, both of you like the likes of Oisin Gallen. And that playing, if you look at the Unions lineup, like there's so many Dr. McGuire winners there and reserve championship winners, you know, the just a formidable opposition. It's probably, Brendan, a cry and shame that there's no Ulster club under 21 this year, probably due to the COVID situation, because you would feel that either of those teams would have given it a real rattle. It's very, very disappointing for that group of players who ever do one on Sunday that they don't get that opportunity to go through and follow it up. Of course, we remember the great Weedower team won it a lot of years ago, and that led them going on one on a senior Ulster club afterwards.
That's a good point, Gary. And actually, I was at a couple of their games. So that was, I remember looking at that going, wow, I've never seen, I suppose, on an Ulster level, a Donegal team absolutely destroying everybody in front of them. It's funny how things can change, you guys, because, you know, as you said, after that, Gidor going one Ulster, only beaten by, you know, by the brilliance of what they call him from Galway. And you know, you would think if they hadn't met Cora Finn, you know, anybody else could have been takeable. Cora Finn was just a complete machine at the time. But then things change, of course, and that's, I suppose, a warning, I think, for St. Junan's going into this final. You know, they have all these Dr. McGuire players, and like even the lads who didn't play played for the reserves in the county final. So you have this mass of talent, but on the day, on any given day, you know, you have to produce it. So it's set up for a feisty one, as you say, Gary. But looking across Ulster, at the weekend there was a couple of big results. You know, and I think from the Donegal team's perspective, if you look at the two teams that beat our side, Gary, you know, Glen Hammer and Scotstown. Now, I know Scotstown lost one of the Hughes early in the second half, and the other Hughes at the end, Darren later on, and Kieran went early in the second half. But at that stage, I think there was 4 or 5 points in it, and Glen were in control. And Steelstown absolutely hammering Dunamoyne of Monaghan. So I suppose when you look at that, both them teams will be thinking, Gary, that, you know, what might have been. Now, I know, certainly, I think probably more so St Julian's, because they certainly had the beating of a Glen team who were absolutely rampant at the weekend, hitting 118, the Scotstown's 12.
Yeah, you know, I was at that Julian's in a Glen Mahara game, and I came out of that game just thinking that Donegal club football, I think, is tactically in a very good place. That tactically, I think, we're ahead the club scene of the other Ulster counties. You know, and Julian's were probably unlucky that they came up against one of the probably men who's seen it all in very little scenarios that he hasn't come across before, as in Malik O'Rourke and Ryan Porter. You know, you would feel if they just didn't have such an experienced management team that they probably wouldn't have got over the line that day. And they were so well prepared going into that game, you would feel. And, you know, it kind of annoys me as well that people talk about, you know, that Glen Mahara team coming in, oh, they're swashbuckling, playing all out attack and play. But I mean, like, I spoke to a good few of the Unions lads after the game, that, and they were saying, like, you know, they'd done plenty of video work on them, that, and they said that they had, you know, they were playing 15 behind the ball, so they were in Derry, you know, but that wasn't the persona that was given out there by the media and that. So sometimes lazy analysis, Brendan, people get taken away by the scoreboard, so they do, and maybe don't look at enough in depth. And it was very much evident the weekend as well. Loads of times they had 15 behind the ball. You know, they're not afraid to get men behind the ball. Yes, they scored 118, but probably Scotstown, you know, they didn't play with an out-and-out sweeper. And it was I mean, I'll say the boys, Danny Tallon, them couldn't believe their luck inside. It was 2v2 most of the time, and they just kind of dropped with the ball. Scotstown, they got men back, but not an out-and-out sweeper was there for them. So it was like, back to the old days, you know, it was so open for them at the back, and they're so well coached. So they are Mahara from Malik O'Rourke, and that, you just see, you know, that, you know, Malik knew what buttons to press in the Scotstown game. He knew Rory Began. He did really well. I think Rory Began, when I read a stat after the game, he took 50% of his kickouts, pressed him really, really well. And you know yourself, he's wild hard to break down at under county level. Never mind club level, you would think they would do better because obviously the players are not as high a quality. Like, you know, but to me yesterday, he kept looking for Kieran Hughes far too much, and the short was on, you know, numerous times, and he was kind of over-forcing it, and that brought Glen Mahara into the game a while. And Malik O'Rourke knew what buttons to press, and Kieran Hughes, you know, his temperament, suppose, has shown in the past that he's with plenty of red cards with Monaghan and that, and for Scotstown, and obviously, Darren walked the walk as well. So, Malagy knows them boys inside out, and probably knows Rory Began inside out. And they had the Scotstown, or had the Mahara boys well prepped as in what buttons to press to make sure that they would react. And listen, it worked in their favour. And, you know, it's going to be a phenomenal semi-final. So it is. I just can't wait. You know, Mickey Moran, of course, from Glen Mahara against his club now. And the Ulster's
in the, you think of the money he was throwing at Glenn. Listen, there's rumours out there, and you don't know how true they are, but 100 grand on that. You know, obviously, O'Rourke and Porter and the whole team, they're not coming there cheap. Now, you would say there was huge money. What that figure is never going to really be known. But the fact that Mickey Moran, you know, your own club man, he's over in Kilcooey, he's this phenomenal record. Do you think it's strange that he didn't take that job, you know, looking at just completely from the outset?
Yeah, there seems to be internal politics there. You know, there's always, I always say, there's always two sides to every story. You know, it's important that you would always hear the two sides, and, you know, I wouldn't be judgmental on that there until you get the ins and outs of both sides of the people. But you can imagine it's going to add a bit more spice to the game the next day. You know, it's going to be loud, it's going to be aggressive, it's probably going to be in your face type from the stands as well as on the pitch and the sidelines.
Yeah, and you'd imagine exactly keeping players on the pitch is huge, and that is going to be spicy. Of course, a huge one for Derry Connolly at the weekend over Dromore. You know, obviously, the last time they won it there, they beat Trillick. Gary, if memory serves me correct, there's big talk about Trillick and that. So Derry Connolly, though, they're near neighbours, you know, in Ulster terms, only up the road to Trillick and Dromore, but they got the better of a fancy Dromore team in Carrigmore. Huge result for them. You know, Derry Connolly went winning 6 of the last 7 Fermanagh, the whole thing for them is really to make their mark in Ulster. So they're through to place Clann-Éireann of Armagh, who accounted for Creggan of Antrim. So another very interesting semi-final, I suppose, Gary, because you're looking now thinking the winner's going to come out of Glen and Kilcoo. But, you know, either of those sides getting into the final, they'll be thinking they have a chance.
Yeah, you know, and Derry Gonnell, going back to your point there, you know, they've won six of the last seven, and they were beat last year, I can't remember, semi-final or final. And this year, they bring the two replays in Fermanagh as well. So, you know, I'm really sick and tired of listening how good Tyrone Club football is at this stage. They have yet to make a dent in Ulster, you know. So maybe, again, people are being blown away by what they see. And if they
Gary, the only side that would be, if you look at a team like Derrygon, I mean, Tyrone won, it's been 13 different winners in 13 years. So you look at any empire houses now, I know Glen are different, Derry teams always seem to do well, but Scotstown are always there, Derry Gonley are always there, you know, Kilcoo are always there. I think that's probably the difference. If you look for a Tyrone team to come in and maybe, as you say, put some big mark in, they probably need to win a few, but such is the nature of their championship, that seems impossible.
Yeah, it is, but you would think, Bryn, geez, I can't remember, Bryn, the last time a Tyrone team won a game in Ulster, you know, obviously you're back 7-8 years, maybe longer, and, you know, to me, you know, it's nearly blowing up, but yes, it's very competitive, don't get me wrong, and very tight, but maybe the quality's not there, and that's probably the evidence is there that the quality's not there when they go into Ulster, because they failed to win a game in a number of years. And failed to get a run, never mind won a game in Derry Gonley.
It was after extra time, but no, I get you. I mean, it came down the wire. It must have been a bit of a tough
Derry Gonley, Bryn, you know, there's a team I admire. I remember 2019, Kilcoo won Ulster, beat Glenties in the final. Derry Gonley ran them close. I think it was 2 points in the semi-final against Kilcoo. Yeah. I remember Kilcoo went the whole way to the Ireland final. And when Slot Neil also, Bryn, went to the Ireland final, Derry Gonley got beat in the semi-final by Slot Neil after extra time. You know, so they are a good side. And to me, maybe people talk down from Man of Football times. Like, look at Derry Gonley. Look what they've done. And they come through two replays in Fermanagh. So like, looking at that from the outside, and you nearly think that the Fermanagh Championship is a higher quality than the Tyrone Championship, because, you know, that they're able to get over them and they've beaten Tyrone teams the last number of years. And wouldn't it be great to see a Fermanagh team... I think they actually will get into the Ulster final, but wouldn't it be great to see a Fermanagh club team won Ulster, and a team who's been around knocking on the door. Like, their focus is very much on Ulster, because when you won that number of club championships, you have to look at the bigger picture after that.
Yeah, good point, Gary. We're always rooting for the underdog here, and listen, I would love to see that happen if possible. Gary, listen, thanks so much for joining us as ever. Gary, we're going to do a wee roundup next week, myself, yourself, and BK Kilcoyne there. We're going to do a wee end of year and highs and lows and what's in store for all the GA fans next year, Gary. So for now, I'll say goodbye, and we'll catch up next week, all right?
Good man, Brian. Thank you.
Thanks, Gary. All the best, boy. Yeah, great catching up with Gary McDade here. Now, I'm looking forward to this next segment. I think it's an important conversation we need to have. Who would be a ref? Who would be a good ref at that? Well, firstly, I have two of the best with me, Seamus McMonagall and Enda McFeely. Seamus is in the studio here with me, and Enda's on the line. Lads, how are you this evening?
Great.
Yeah, not too bad, Brenton.
We're coming through loud and clear there, Enda.
Yeah, a wee bit more volume, maybe.
Pump you up a bit. Enda, do you know, lads, listen, the reason I wanted to have this conversation is because, Seamus, I've spoken to you quite a few times, and you as well, Enda, about the whole story of refereeing, between the tough job that you just have to do, the attitude towards it on the pitch and from the terraces, and how that fits into your life, and how that then is going to, I suppose, inhibit the recruitment of good refs. Now, as we know, no ref, no game. And if we don't have good refs in, if we put them off by people's attitudes towards them, it's going to lessen the game. So I think just having this conversation around how refereeing fits and your views on where you see it going, because it's vital to the game that we have good refs in, and we want to try and encourage, I suppose, the subject of people's understanding of that, Seamus. First of all, Seamus, how did you get into refereeing?
Well, I suppose I made a conscious decision when I came back to Donegal that I was going to get involved in the GAA in one way or other. And I started off actually coaching under 12 teams out in Lifford, Neve Padraig in Lifford. That's where it started off. I was playing junior football then with Lifford as well. And I always recalled Dolores O'Kelly was the secretary at the time. and she encouraged me to go for referee, and I think she saw something in me football that pointed towards a refereeing career rather than football. But that's basically, I know that the county board at the time were going to bring in a fine of, I think it was £200 at the time, if you hadn't, if a club hadn't got a referee. And between the jigs and the reels, I was put forward anyway. The rest.
Good man.
27 years later, I'm still.
Do you know the way out of football and heroes? And was the likes of Seamus here your refereeing hero? Was that how you got into it?
Next question.
Well, as you know,
Seamus is the top referee, and we are actually very lucky to have him in the county. And to be honest with you, going to games as I was growing up, I used to watch Seamus, and you actually were kind of an awe, Seamus. You know, that's big frame of a man coming out, silver hair, brown legs. I loved every part of the referee.
A Greek god from Ballyshannon.
Yeah, that's right.
And I spoke to you at the park there recently, and the whole concept of you going out and becoming a ref and enjoying it versus kind of some of the stuff that's going on there between, is it more on the pitch or is it the terrace, and in terms of, you know, some of the stuff that's really, I suppose, made you think about questioning the future of refereeing?
Well, I'll tell you, Brendan, for starters, I got into it in 2012 because I gave up football and I just still wanted to be involved in GAA a bit more. And the more I got into it, the more I enjoyed it, and you take the highs and the lows. You get plenty of highs, you get plenty of lows, but it's how you bounce back from it. But I've noticed in the last few years that people have the tendency to over-criticise referees. And now, it's not an easy job. Let me tell you, it's not an easy job. And we don't go out onto the pitch to do any team any harm. We try our best. We try and get most calls right. Not easy at times because you'd need two sets of eyes, never mind one. But at the same time, players generally, 99% of players generally are good. Generally, that there has definitely got better. But as far as the terraces go, the abuse that referees are getting at the minute from terraces is beyond a joke, to be honest. You can see why people aren't, new referees aren't coming into the game. You can see why some referees are quitting the game. I just think something we seriously need to look at, just.
Yeah, and listen, then that's why we got to highlight that, because as you're saying there, it's so vital that we keep good guys like yourself and that in it. I mean, you've life, you've a family all around you, and Seamus, you're the same. You're doing it so long now. You've obviously built up a certain way of dealing with that, Seamus. Even though you shouldn't have to, you know, you just plough on. You know what you're doing. You trust what you're doing. But that side of it shouldn't be there. You know, we're GAA, when you think about it, sometimes people, that's why I wanted to have this conversation. Sometimes we're the GAA, we're the club, we're the county, we're all together. We seem to put refs outside of that. You're all GAA, man. Yeah. You love what you do, and you want to make the game the best it can be. So we got to respect that, you know.
I agree with the point there that Enda made, actually. Players now, I give less guff, for want of a better word, than ever before. I think they're more disciplined. Now, there is certainly an issue with supporters and management teams. And it hasn't got any better, and it may have got worse over the last few years. And it's something I see over the years, really, that it's not a particular club you have a problem with. It's the management of a team and the sideline, really, that dictates how it plays. Because that even winds spectators up to an extent. I've seen, I'm not long enough that I've seen clubs where it was a torture to go near them, and then the manager would change the following season. There wouldn't be a bother with them at all. So I think it's important that club committees and club management teams kind of dictate the way referees are treated, they dictate the atmosphere to an extent, because they kind of wind players up, they wind supporters up, and they should just kind of take a stand back and realise there's such an important role, such an important influence on the teams and spectators, that should just set themselves down a little.
Yeah.
And I think from a management perspective too, you're doing yourself no justice dancing up and down the sideline when you should be actually concentrating on the players,
yeah,
rather than disputing a free kick, wherever,
yeah,
you know.
And that's a good point. You see that it if you look at who sets the tone, it's a bit like something on the pitch. It's a bit like you setting down an early marker in the game. Everybody knows, right, you can't do that. There's yellow cards gone out or whatever. Is it something similar in the stand where people even need to be around to say, here, calm this down, because if someone's allowed to do it, then it festers a wee bit. A bit like you're saying, if the trainer on the line's hopping up and down, it's going to get the players agitated and get fans agitated. Is it something that people who are on certain roles need to, you know, set the tone for around the game?
Well, Seamus made a good point there of management, and as you rightly said, there Seamus has a big contribute greatly to the way supporters react as the management team, but not in all cases. I think generally there is supporters out there, not being critical. I don't want to be critical or harsh. There's plenty of passionate GAA people, but there's a line between passion and anger, and I just think people take it too far. Like supporters start getting very personal. You know, I know it's kind of hard to take at times, but I think as a club, clubs and managers should maybe be able to deal with that situation slightly better, maybe, than what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah. And listen, I went on the GAA website last night just to see the official breakdown of what a referee should be. You'll enjoy these, Seamus. Said thorough knowledge of the rules, obviously, physically and mentally fit. Which these two guys,
of course, yeah.
We have a former Mr. Universe on the line here in Enda.
Seamus.
Deal courteously with players and officials. Courteously, don't forget that. I hope you get it back, right? Have the ability to remain calm, which is both to operate strictly in accordance with the rules, principles of the game. Moral courage. Have the moral courage to make decisions which are correct. Be able to live with unfair criticism. Well, there you go. If it doesn't go too far, be able to accept constructive criticism. Now, if you get constructive criticism, you'll be all right with that. And I think Enda is the same. You know, retain a good learning graph. Be alert. Enjoy refereeing, and I suppose that's a big one. You know, and you guys have to enjoy it, because what, you know, why else are you there? Like, committed to be the protection of players, prevention of abusive or violent conduct. I presume that's against each other players. Never mind yourself. Be a good communicator. At all times, be well presented. There you go, Enda. You're right again about Seamus. Be well presented. That was the one that highlighted him. Of course, behave with dignity both on and off the pitch. So, listen, that's a grand rule breakdown for referees. And as you were saying, if there was anything like that on the way back, there would be no issue. But, Seamus, you made a good point with me there just when we were talking off air about people look at refereeing and the whole, and there's all these different rules coming in and they're pulling and dragging and they throw them on you and the season starts. And as you say, players, I think, are beginning to wise up on that, because there's so much tactics and talk. I think players now realise there's so much tactic going into games. It's not got maybe the spontaneity of before. So a lot of the times, I think, do leave the refs to do it. But you were saying, by and large, a lot of the things you'll do is around steps and the tackle, and that's such a massive point of what the game is.
I think one thing with the huge numbers on the sideline in management teams, does anybody ever sit down and actually read the rule book at the beginning of the season? And I'd like to see people giving an honest answer to that. If you ask throughout club management teams, it'd be no harm for people actually get a referee and get somebody in and actually say, these are the rules and these are what we should be doing. It's a point I often make about the hand pass. If you check the rule books as regards a hand pass, it's meant to be either a fist pass or there has to be a distinctive underhand striking action. Yeah. Now, I defy anybody to see this underhand striking action too often in the game.
Yes.
You know, it does happen, in all honesty. So the referee is making a subjective decision to some extent. And that invites debate, to say the least.
Yeah.
The same with how often have we seen a forward going through in goal, being blown for taking five steps? You know, does it happen? It should, you know, that's the rule. But again, so the referee is making a subjective decision. And they're difficult decisions to make in the heat of battle, survey, or in the middle of a game,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And it can be difficult. But the referee is, going back to the attributes the book says a referee should have, you have to have integrity more than anything. You make the call, you make the honest call as to what's the right thing at any given time. And once people see that you're doing that, they should respect that and let give you the space to make that decision without making issues about it. And just going back to what I was saying about the actual rules and the way Keith Duggan has an article in the Irish Times on Saturday there about refereeing in general. And just when he refers to the GAA, he says rules are subject to the leniency and interpretation of a given referee. So once any rule is subject to interpretation, well, there's obviously going to be debate then on it. You're never going to get agreement. So it's just, that's the rules of the game. That's the way it is. You can't, okay, it's easy saying all rules are black and white. Yes, they are. But when it comes to it in the middle of a sporting contest, and especially a game where there's 30 players, you can use your feet and your hands in the ball. There's a lot to watch, and sometimes you're not going to blow every single foul. And I honestly do think if a referee pulled every single technical foul in the game, would there be a game at all?
Yes.
But bottom line,
is that a rule book there?
That's a row. I carry this
that's
everywhere.
That's the first time
Brendan,
I've
Brendan, I take this everywhere
some
with me.
It's interesting note, Sig. It's easy wee notes.
I put it under my pillow at night, even.
Well, like,
I think Seamus was actually two or three of them, really, if I can remember correctly.
He's good as one more. This is the Seamus McGonigal version of it. And just on that, I suppose, but the GAA, of course, is skyrocketing popularity. And I think that has probably led to the intense nature of everybody zoning in on everything on it and every wee point. And just speaking to Seamus before the game too, you know, if you have a game that's slightly one-sided, no one says a word about the ref. So really, this comes down to, you know, tight games, championship games, the to and fro of it. And as we were saying before, if a team loses a game by a point, they'll go back to points that they missed or a goal they missed, but they'll go back to refereeing decisions because they're grasping at things. Do you find that's a big point of it, Enda, that people look for ways that they lost the game and try and blame someone?
Yeah, well, you see, first port of contact to blame is naturally the referee. Shouldn't be naturally, but it is. A team might have lost the game by a point because the referee gave a penalty, which 9 times out of 10 probably was a penalty, do you know what I mean? Mm. But to forget the fact that 10 minutes earlier, Joe Soap was running up the pitch and he kicked the ball away and a score come off it.
Yes.
To tie the game, do you know what I mean? Like, they have 15 players out in the field and very reluctant to blame any one of them. As the man in the middle with the black jersey, I feel that gets most of the brunt unfairly.
Yeah. Well, they better not be sitting too close to Desi when they're doing that there. They could be in trouble. Listen, do you know what? I left one wee thing out later to this, the RTE thing here, or sorry, the GAA website thing. This is the last point on it here. You like this, Andy? Have a sense of humour and the ability to smile. While these qualities are not requirements, they're a great asset.
Well, let me tell you, Brendan, I think I messed up on it well, to be honest.
Actually,
do you know what? All seriousness, that one there is quite important because it's very important to build up a good repertoire with players. Yeah. And personally, on a personal note, I feel like if you're able to go through a game, even the team's getting beat, and you can have a quick joke with the corner forward or corner back, the respect is automatically there. You know that they know you. They have your respect, and you know that you have their respect, and that's vitally important in a game. No matter what happens outside the terrace, so that's a different ball game. You know what I mean?
Sure. And for my playing days, and I would always say this from way back, Seamus, the fact you were saying there about the rule book, if you read the rule book, is it not a thing where a ref would go into the dressing room or under the huddle and say, "Right, guys, this is what's happening here." You know, around, say there is a bit of a new rule in like a black card or how I'm going to ref it, you know, keep it clean here. Almost set a wee tone around, let's play the game, lads. Is that not something that should happen?
Well, it's one thing, before a game starts, you usually have a word with the two captains.
Yeah.
And sometimes that can be forgotten before a game starts.
Yeah.
But I know one rule I emphasise to the captains this last year or two is the mark. The fact you have to put your hand up to get a mark. You know what I mean? People think once the referee blows the whistle, that's the mark. No, you have to put your hand up. So I always make a point of reminding the two captains that before the game starts, that when they're going back into their huddle, tell the players that, because there is an ambivalence there a lot of the time as to whether you put your hand up or not. And you have that little word with them. I just think at the start of every season, it'd be a good idea, as I said earlier, for referees to speak to clubs, or at least clubs to get a rule book and get a look at them, you know.
And are you consulted at all about the incoming rule changes? You know, you hear all this stuff at Crow Park Canvas, and we need the black card. Surely refs need to have a point in that, do they not?
I would think that, and I'm sure somewhere along the line, some referee somewhere does have some input, but I don't think it goes out to county level or even provincial level.
Right.
It's referees are kind of told this is their new rule, and there you go.
And if you've much issue with that, Enda, with the way rules come in and are just thrown on you, is this something you have to get on with, or is it something that doesn't bother you?
Doesn't really bother me, Brendan, to be quite honest, because you have to make it make it a point to learn the rules, as I say. But the way rules have been thrown at us this last few years has been a wee bit concerning, to be honest, because they're expecting clubs just to adapt right away, and clubs don't adapt. And when referees apply the new rules, that's where some of the abuse comes in, if you know what I mean. I think rule changes need to be made well in advance of the start of the season, so everybody can grasp what the consequences of them are. I think that would help things immensely, to be honest.
That's very much.
And Seamus, listen, obviously you're a top cop. You know, you don't want to be falling out because a ref or a cop. You don't have to be careful with such things.
Aaron, they're two separate matters completely. I didn't know what they were talking about there for a second. I'm so focused on referee, I forget everything else.
Well, I don't want to fight with a ref, I don't also want to fight with any cops. But James, looking forward, you know, how is the recruitment side of things done then? Is it just, is there any effort made? Did you just throw it to the club? Every club's supposed to put up a referee.
Every club is meant to have a referee.
Yeah.
And over the years, I've been a referee tutor back for a few years, and it's a constant battle to get new refereeing recruits in every year. And it's certainly gotten no easier over the years, despite the best efforts of people at county level here. I think an issue here over the years, obviously, is that referees start out in underage games. And the underage games are on the practice pitches where there's people are standing around the side and you can literally hear everything they shouted at you.
Mm.
Now, I obviously, in the point, you referred to what I work at earlier, and it is relevant in the sense that people who work in the jobs like that are used to getting a bit of verbals and aren't shy of that. There's a lot of jobs. If you're working in construction, you're going to get a bit of... But there's a lot of people working in offices now and they're not used to getting abuse of any description. Mm. So the first time somebody roars and calls you... Whatever, you know, it's a strange experience for an awful lot of people nowadays. So you have to kind of get over that hump, as it were, for the first year or two. And unfortunately, because young referees start off in those underage games where there's the parents are all around the pitch, they hear every word. And there's a huge attrition rate after 2 years. And I know over the years, actually, people who would have turned out to be, I would have thought would have ended up being very good adult referees, give it up after a year or two of listening to mums and dads at under 12 and under 14 games. Mm. You know, because they're, and people just need to stand back and think, if you're stopping young fellas and girls from refereeing, if you're turning them off at that stage, it's down the line, it's not going to bide well for the organisation, you know.
Mm. Linda, did you have any bumpy moments like that when you started off, where you thought, I don't know about this? You obviously stuck with it, fair play to you, but was that an issue at those early stages, trying to get used to that kind of nonsense was coming across from the sidelines?
Oh yeah, to be honest with you, it's a wee bit intimidating at the start, you know, when you start off. Like, in man, there's a time I thought, like, I'll never continue at this here, because it's not worth it, you know, because the room says for being a referee, you have to be mentally strong. You can be mentally strong to a certain extent, like, but when it's continuous, it starts to eat away at you, you know, and I suppose you have to be a wee bit strong to continue at it, all right. I just think people could be a wee bit more respectful as far as recruitment of young referees at the minute as a no-no. Because nobody wants to do it, and I think if people laid off slightly, we would get more people interested, and
the game would be better, and because you're going to have better refs in, you know, where you're actually inhibiting, you know, what you think is you're giving off about a ref. You're stopping better refs coming through. Not that the guy you're giving off about is not good, but you're stopping future guys coming into the game.
Oh, of course you are, and that's like, we need all the referees we can get. Donegal is a massive county. We need. There's a lot of games to cover. Teams don't want to see the same referee coming in the gate maybe 2 weeks in a row or every second week or something like that, because you might have a good reputation with them or whatever, but you know, you want something fresh in there. You want to, like, all referees have their different way of refereeing, and it's not wrong and it's not right, but they have their own way. And I think if we can recruit more referees and maybe lay off the abuse slightly, we can certainly encourage them to stay at it, if you know what I mean.
And tell me, and just, it'd be interesting now, Seamus was telling me, you doing the Steelstown down a Moyen game yesterday?
No, I done the Moortown Nairn Gales game yesterday in Carrickmore there.
In Carrickmore. And tell me, when you're out of the county then, is that a different thing altogether in terms of people don't know you or that? It's interesting to hear what the games are like when you go into an Ulster game where people don't know you.
Well, when people don't, well, it's like us here. Teams, obviously, they do a wee bit of... See, teams actually do a wee bit of research on who's reffing the game and what's it like or whatever, but generally speaking, when you go outside the county, I think players nearly have an automatic respect because they don't want to get in the wrong city because they don't know maybe what you're like. Supporters are definitely more passionate. Managers are passionate. But most of the time, they conduct it in a good way, if you know what I mean. There's no personal vendetta against you, but... As for players are generally very good, to be honest with you, because, as I say, they don't want to get on your wrong side.
Yeah. And, Seamus, do you think it's a miscalculated attempt to affect you, right, in your decisions? Let's say now there's a decision, there's another decision. People are getting excited, the crowd get excited. Does the crowd then actually think, right, we've put the pressure on him, he'll give us the next decision? Do you think it's that's going through people's head sometimes when they're getting a bit excited.
Well, I honestly think they're mistaken if they think that.
I know they are, but maybe
the junior, but seriously, when you get the Division One club referee, and we've all heard it before, you know what I mean? No matter what you say or how the crowd gets wound up, it's not going to affect the people at Seven End or that level, you know. And they're wasting their time, and they're wasting their energy. As I said earlier about managers, jumping up on the sideline does nobody any good. You know, it's a waste of energy.
Yeah.
You know, that's...
Yeah. And tell me, have you any incidents in there which were good, bad or indifferent? You don't have to name any clubs now. How many years you had it now?
26 or 27.
That's some service, boy.
I don't know what you call it, service. If you ask my wife, she'd probably say some form of madness.
But they're happy enough for you to continue.
Absolutely. And can I just do, because we're speaking about issues that are out there, and there are undoubtedly are issues out there, but at the end of the day, it's been so enjoyable. So enjoyable. You're meeting fellow referees who go on the best. You're meeting people. I know people in every club in the county. Decent people who go out there week in, week out, helping their community, training youngsters to play football and get involved in sport. They're the salt of the earth, the people you meet. And 99% of the people you meet in every club in the land are good, ordinary, decent people trying their best for their communities.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I just come on that a wee second, Brendan?
Go for it, innit?
Just a point Seamus touched on there. As you go outside the county, the fabulous people that you can meet outside the county. I was in Carrickmore yesterday and you couldn't be treated any better, even you went to a hotel. It was just fantastic. And the friends... The friends that you make along the way, like me and two other guys travel to Croke Park together every year. And it was classed them as best friends now, and we got to know them through the refereeing, and it opened up new doors outside the county. Mm. You know, new allegiances, and I just think we could learn a lot by maybe having the respect for referees that they deserve.
And it's interesting you say that, Enda, because see what you said there earlier about having a laugh or a joke and that. Like, I can see that from... The stand, you know, I can see you having a word with a boy and a smile. I think that's such a nice side of it. And even before the game, you see refs having a crack and a joke with people. That's the way it should be, you know. And I know people get a bit heated on the game, but there should be much more enjoyment there and that wee bit of tolerance. And even, you're right, it's the same when I go around the place in media. How you're looked after in places is very humbling. You know, there's so much goodness out there. Yeah. And then the next thing, it gets into this terrible phase sometimes because people are putting it all on the ref. And I think it's such a shame. And that's why I think we need to have this conversation, Enda, that the enjoyment should be there for you as well. And sure, people will get a bit passionate in OTT, but we need to rein it back in and encourage everybody to enjoy the game. And people, they mostly respect you trying to do your best.
Listen, as I said before at the start of the programme, no referee goes out with a vendetta against any team. And every free has awarded in its own right. Like, because you awarded a free earlier and the fella gave you a bit of jip, you're not going to award another free just for the sake of it. But people get this under their head that you have a vendetta against them. The stats man might come over to you at half time and say, listen, we had 10 frees given against us and they had only 2. My answer to that would be, well, discipline your players a wee bit better. That's nothing that I did wrong.
Yes.
It's the fact that your players done it wrong. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
father always told me that now he knows a fair bit about football now, my father knows he gets his point across, but he always told me that after the game years ago, what I don't remember, after the game, all's forgotten. The game's over, and it's left on the field at that. But it has crept into the game now where the referee is walking off and it can't be left alone, you know. No, it still carries on. It carries on. It carries on to social media. It carries on to... We had one referee in the county, Brendan, this year that was bombarded with phone calls in the middle of the night after the game. Now, that there, Seamus is a guard now, and some of the things that be said, and that, like that there going on, if you'd done that outside of a football field, you could be arrested or you could be in court or you could be... Do you know what I mean? Like... Right. We're human the same as everybody else, and we just want a wee bit of courtesy. That's all we ask for.
Yeah. That's why Seamus could double up. He could just arrest somebody straight away. I think that's why he's a dangerous man. Listen, just on the respect, the famous line from Martin McGorry, former Tyrone manager, says, why would I put manners in my boy when the parish up the road aren't putting manners in theirs, you know? So who threw the first punch? But lads, just reading it up here, a question just about fixtures, you know, Seamus. Is it a matter of right? You're here, you're in the town, there's a game in O'Donnell Park and there's one in Glencombe Kill. Who decides who goes where? How does that all work out?
I think the CCC decide ultimately who's ref and where. Now, I know the issues. You're told, you mightn't be told on the Tuesday or Wednesday where the game is or who you're doing, and that could change on a Friday. And that's just, I suppose, the last couple of years that there's issues there because of the circumstances we're in. But the CCC decides basically who.
Right. Where, and you see that type of trip on the Ulster end? You just put your name forward at the Ulster club stuff, you're available for it. Is that how it works?
Not really, Brenton. I'm an Ulster now quite a number of years, and once you're involved in Ulster, you're automatically put out. If your assessments are good, your fitness level's good, all that has to come into play for you to get games in Ulster because it's so competitive for the referees up there.
If I can just cut across, and it's been too modest, really. He's on the Ulster referees panel, and that's it. That's because of his performance in Donegal. He's so good over the last few years. You're headhunted from the county, the Ulster.
Well, I appreciate it, Seamus.
Good man.
Hopefully, we get the higher call shortly. You never know.
And nobody deserves it more. And that's, I mean,
there you go, folks. We have a man that's been headhunted round Ulster, so have a bit of manners when he is in our own county. We're lucky to have him. How's that?
Thank you very much, Brendan.
That's a good man. And listen, you're top man. Shakes, of course, as ever. You're 26 years, Mike. Of fair play to you. We owe you a big.
I can't see me reffing after 26 years.
If you do, we'll get you back on the show, Mike. I'll learn to be here. We'll get you on for somebody else. Listen, lads, thanks so much for joining us. That was a great chat. Hey, keep up the good work.
No bother. Thanks, Brendan.
Thank you very much.
All the best, Enda. Right, folks, that's a wrap here on the DL Debate. I want to thank my guests, of course, Gary McDade, earlier in the show, and our two top refs, Seamus McMonagall and Enda McFeely. So join us next week for more of the DL Debate, but hopefully we'll get Paddy McGrath on. We have Gary McDade and Brendan Kilcoyne rounding up the year that was 2021 and look ahead to 2022. I'll speak to you all then.
The DL Debate with Sister Sarah's Letterkenny, serving food you'll love in Sarah's Kitchen.